Hello everyone, my name's Jess and this is a special two-part episode of Better Than Bad. For those who don't know, the podcast is usually a pretty light-hearted discussion about a person's best and worst films, but I wanted to use this platform to get a bit serious and talk about an issue that is really important to me. The next two episodes will feature discussions surrounding the portrayal of female bodies on screen and the perpetuation of beauty standards. In this first episode, I'm joined by a special guest, Taylor, who has been on the show before. We're going to be deep diving into three films that I feel represent these issues in a very different way. We'll also be having a look at some survey responses I collected on this very issue. It's important to note that I've found films that lean into my own experiences with my body and how my relationship with my body image has been shaped by the films I've watched. I want to point out that my experiences will vary from people outside of my own race, gender, and sexual identity. And while my guests and I take a moment to focus on our own experiences, I really encourage everyone to research the effects that these issues will have on people outside of their own experiences. I'll leave any links I find about these issues in the description of this episode. And this is also an open discussion, so please feel free to reach out at BetterBadPod on Twitter and Instagram if you have anything you would like to discuss surrounding this issue. And finally, I want to offer a trigger warning to anyone who suffers from any form of body image related issues. Please proceed with caution, as there will be discussions surrounding topics that may be triggering to you. Welcome, Taylor.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here.
Hi, thank you so much for joining me today on what I don't doubt will be a really interesting chat.
Yeah, the pleasure is all mine. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, so I put out a tweet a while ago asking if people wanted to be involved in this, and you were very quick to message me and say that you did. So I wanted to kind of start this off by asking why this issue is so important to you.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I am a young woman, 25, who grew up in the era of, you know, unhealthily thin representation of beauty standards all around me. So to say that, like, not only did I absorb it from the media that I, you know, consumed as a child and even now, but also was just like around it in my life, in my family. Like, I struggle with my own, you know, body image issues. And so this is also something that's very like close to my heart, especially as someone who has a background in theater, not necessarily as much in an acting perspective as you, but like studied theater and is now like, you know, really into film and also just grew up watching TV and film. I just feel like it's something that I can definitely attribute to my own body image issues. And so it's something that should be talked about way more.
For this episode, we're going to be diving into three films that each portray women's bodies in their own way, for better or for worse. We've got Bridget Jones's Diaries, Dumplin', and Good Luck to You, Leo Grande. I thought we'd start off with Bridget Jones.
Why not just rip the Band-Aid off?
For those who don't know, Bridget Jones's Diary was released in 2001. It's a film adaptation of the book by the same name that was released in 1996. It has a Rotten Tomatoes rating of 80% and a 6.8 star rating on IMDb. It stars Renée Zellweger as the titular character, who is a 32-year-old woman living in London, working in publishing and trying to navigate her life as a single woman. I mean, to start with, I really find it quite hilarious that they try and paint this woman as being unsuccessful when she literally lives in like Borough Market in London. Yeah. In the most gorgeous flat.
Yeah, has stairs in her flat.
Yeah. Borough Market is like central London. Like, she's in the middle.
She has a balcony. Okay, I don't even have a balcony in Baltimore. Also, just the elephant in the room here is that I'm American.
It's Bridget Jones is a weird one. I don't know what it's like, what its reach was like in the States, but in the UK, it's kind of become a cult classic.
I would say that that's true here as well. And I actually, like, something that I was really excited about when diving into these movies, and like when you brought up Bridget Jones, and something that's continued to make me more excited, is I actually just finished reading the book High Fidelity. And it's a very British book. And I feel like that book was the first time, not to like stray too far off, but that book was the first time that I realized that there are just differences in, I think, like the self-deprecating humor that Brits tend to have, I think, and like that kind of like harsh humor that America has maybe phased out of a little more. Not to say that like we don't have people like that and that's not representative, but I definitely think it's like amplified in the UK. And I am like halfway through the High Fidelity movie, and I was thinking while reading it, because I knew that it was set in the States for the movie and not the book. And I remember thinking, like, I feel like I'm giving this character so much lenience for being British in the book. And when they take that away, he's just going to be, like, kind of unbearable. And that's the experience I'm having. And so, like, Bridget Jones is another interesting one where I feel like it definitely has similar cult status, maybe not, like, quite as culty, but definitely, like, is very beloved in the States and very, like, representational of, like, what it's like to be a young single woman and, like, this kind of, like, I don't want to say like manic pixie, but like kind of in that vein of like, do you know what I'm trying to say? Mm-hmm. Like, it definitely still has that status in the States, but I feel like I've had this like flipped switch in my head of like, I do think that there are just differences in how people handle their baggage and drama and like speak it out in the world when it comes to like British and like British versus American.
Yeah, I mean, this is Bridget Jones always feels like a very British film. And I'll be completely honest, despite its very problematic nature, I do really love this film. It is a film that I've watched many a time.
I'm so glad to hear that, because I was like, if you come on here and say like, this movie's horrible, it's all problems, and I'm just gonna be like, I kind of thought, like, I laughed a couple times.
Yeah, like, it's, there's a huge like shadow over it because of the way it portrays certain things, and it is a product of its time. I think that's kind of important to note. You know, art does not age with us, so as our, you know, as we develop, kind of stays the same. So it's a weird one to watch from sort of a 2023 lens, but I still find it enjoyable. I still laugh when I'm supposed to laugh. I still, you know, get super happy when she chases after Colin Firth in the snow. You know, there's all these really good moments, and I think that that's why it's kind of stood the test of time. But it is one of those films where most people I speak to have some kind of reaction to the way that she is portrayed and her body is portrayed.
I feel like it's similar with Love Actually. I feel like I've had this conversation recently, like this holiday time when I rewatched Love Actually. Like, that movie is problematic, but you know, like we all know that, especially with the way that Hugh Grant's assistant and like love interest is portrayed, and how everyone says she's fat, and that's like literally the most ridiculous thing. But like, I still like the movie. I still find it charming. I'm still invested in the stories, you know. Yeah. So I think that like, it's important to, I think saying that it's a product of a time is undeniably true, especially for Bridget Jones. But I think that's also because we were raised with these ideas of women's bodies. When we set up stories to discuss them in a self-deprecating way, it's relatable. Not because they are doing it to further the narrative. I mean, they might be doing that unintentionally, but because we have now been in this world long enough to make that narrative relatable.
Yeah. And I think particularly in 2001, many, many women who were around this age would have really related to her. This kind of working woman who's, you know, one thing that she doesn't have is a man. And there were so many things that came out around this same time that had this narrative. I mean, like Sex and the City was basically that. This idea of these women who were at the top of their game, but they didn't have men. And it's a sort of strange thing where the reason that she doesn't have a man is painted to be because of her appearance. And mm-hmm. that's not, and it's because I think the overlying message of this film is actually that you shouldn't change yourself for anyone else, because at the end of the day, like, Colin Firth's character, Mark Darcy, literally rocks up at the end and is like, I love you just the way you are. And we're all supposed to be like, oh, swoon, yay, like, look at that. But because
I was literally crying. I have seen this movie before, but I will say I didn't actually watch it for the first time until the pandemic. And I didn't like it, like, really. Maybe I was just depressed because of the pandemic. Like, I do think a lot of the movies that I watched for the first time I didn't like and then liked a lot more on a rewatch. So definitely a product of circumstance. But, like, when he buys her the diary, like, I swoon. I also love that, like, in this world where Renee Zellweger is, you know, fat and ugly, like, Colin Firth is also, like, supposed to be ugly, and he's, like, the most gorgeous man ever. So, like, no, what is this world? It's opposite day.
I think this with Hollywood in general, like, you have all these super attractive people, and then we're expected to believe that they're, like, bog standard average, or, like,
yeah.
on the flip side of that, ugly, and you're like, look at them going, guys, like, it's Colin Firth. Like, you cannot convince me this.
You
guy
just
is, like,
you just parted his hair like a little different, and he's ugly now. No, he's gorgeous.
Because the amount of times they mention her weight is actually, like, scary.
Yeah, it's amount of, it's honestly, it's the amount of times that she mentions her own weight, which I, like, sadly empathize with, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, we just exited February, new year, new me. We've heard it our whole lives, you know? Mm-hmm. So many people say, oh, what's your New Year's resolution? Oh, I want to lose 40 pounds or whatever. Yeah. And I do think something that was so crazy to me on this rewatch that I really noticed was she puts in her starting weight, which is, like, 135 pounds.
Yeah.
And she goes, like, I want to lose 20 pounds. Yeah. That is 115 pounds. Not that size and weight is the same on everyone, obviously, whether you're tall, whether you're short, mm-hmm. like, obviously those things, athletic, not muscular, not, those things have, you know, meaning. But just for reference, just, like, spilling my own tea here, I weighed 115 pounds by, like, fifth grade. Because I was a really tall kid.
Mm.
And I vividly remember sitting in PE class, and somehow, because again, we are children and still being conditioned to talk about weight, I remember being in the fourth grade and I just hit 100 pounds and I didn't think anything of it. And my friend was like, yeah, I'm like 70 pounds. And I was like, oh my God, I'm humongous. But then you look at me and I'm like 5 inches taller than everybody mm-hmm. around me. And so, like the fact that those seeds are, like, planted so early, and still seeing that, like, my goal weight is 115 pounds, I was still like, ooh, like, ooh, that didn't feel good. I still had mm-hmm. like a visceral reaction to that. Like, oh my God, I remember being that weight and already thinking that I was so big, you know?
It's like, within the first 20 minutes of the film, we hear her go that we hear her talk about how she has fears of dying fat and alone, because mm-hmm. that's clearly the worst thing that could ever happen to a woman. And then, you know, she's very clearly thin anyway. Like, it's as clear as day. She has curves, but a lot of women do. But she's thin, and then she's talking about, you know, obviously lose 20 pounds, and you're just there like, what are you talking about? And there's, like, throughout the whole film, there's, like, frequent references to her weight. There's the billboard in Piccadilly Circus. mm-hmm. There's how much weight she's lost, and it's, like, replaced food with sex. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh my God.
And I feel like, and I don't know if you have this memory, it's so funny because I hadn't watched this film until the pandemic for the first time, but it was still very much in my line of sight, like, my whole life. I feel like I knew everything about it before I even watched it. I vividly remember people and, like, adults talking about Renee Zellweger in this movie. Mm-hmm. And everyone loved to talk about how she would talk about how much weight she had to gain for the role. Oh my God, like, tabloid covers, like, Renee Zellweger gains 30 pounds to reprise her role in Bridget Jones's Baby. Like, I have such a clear memory of that, and thinking, like, oh my God, that must have been so hard for her. Yeah. And, like, how unbelievable. How unbelievable. Like, it just goes to show that, like, they want these large, quote unquote, actresses, right? They needed a larger person than Renee Zellweger to play Bridget, because she wouldn't be Bridget if she wasn't large, right? And I'm doing air quotes, you can't see me. I'm trying to exaggerate with my voice. But instead of just like, and I'm sure you'll talk about this with your, you know, with your actors, actor friends on the second part of this episode, but they can't just hire someone that looks the way they want to look. And also, even if they did, then it would be like wildly demeaning, because they would basically be in a situation where they actually weigh that much and then are constantly like demeaning themselves about that weight. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's just like, we might as well hire someone that's thin and then make her gain the weight, but she knows that she can just get it off anyway, so it doesn't matter.
It is interesting that we can consistently see these thin actors being cast in quote unquote bigger roles. And it's like, well, just cast a bigger actor. But then it's,
yeah,
it is what you say. It's like, if you're a plus size actor, do you really want to be spending your entire time during a film, like during a filming process, like prodding your stomach and while there's cameras on you being like, I'm so fat, I hate my body. Like, it, what does that do to someone? It's a strange thing. And I find the way that the other characters speak to Bridget in this really sad. Like when she's talking about how Mark has said that he likes her just as she is, one of her best friends turns around and goes, what, not thinner? And it's like, you're supposed to be her best friend.
It's crazy. And I, you know, it's, again, we go back to this, like, I mean, God, I pray that, you know, you or, you know, anyone listening to this never experiences a quote unquote friend like that, or not even a friend, a person. We've all had, you know, bullies and stuff. I such a clear memory of the first time someone like called me fat, and I was in like math class, I think in seventh grade, and it just like crushed me. And, like, so we all have like those people, but like, God, I really hope that like you nor anyone listening to this is like hanging around people willingly that will talk to them so horribly. And like, none of them, it's so, what's so funny is they, not funny, obviously, I'm using that term ironically, but like we were just talking about, they set up this world, right, of Colin Firth being like an ugly duckling, but then they still can't believe when he wants her. So it's not only is she not worthy of Hugh Grant, who's gorgeous, she's not even worthy of any man. She's not even worthy of an unattractive man. She's just simply not worthy. And that's definitely like brutal.
Something I wrote down was that like, when the audience are like consistently hounded with lines and images that suggest to us that her weight is such a deep flaw that she must change it, it can only serve to damage us and our own relationship with our weight.
Because
if that's jabs that are used at her constantly, it sort of, you know, it messes with us. It puts us into this space where if those are the things being weaponized against her, then they're almost weaponized against us as audiences.
Absolutely. I mean, it's conditioning. Right? Like, it's this and a zillion other movies and a zillion other TV shows and a zillion other musical artists and whoever, and it's a zillion parents who just make these tiny comments your whole life that condition an entire generation of people who truly deeply believe that about themselves. And I texted you today and said, so I was on, I'll tell the story. I was on the metro this morning, and okay, I'm just going to be very vulnerable for a second and say I'm having a really down time on my appearance right now. Okay. We all go through it. I'm coming off my time of the month. I'm breaking out. I've been stressed and I've torn my nails to bits. I'm bloated. I'm not feeling good about myself. Okay. No shame in the game. I'm sorry if you can hear the siren. I'm on the metro, and I am a person who loves to romanticize their commute, because if I don't, I'll have to quit my job, and I can't do that. So I love to like listen to like hype up music and be like, everyone on this train loves me. Everyone on this train wants to chase off. And like, I literally am in a happy relationship, but I just like have this fantasy, right? This romantic, like, oh, everybody like is just, they love my outfit. They love whatever. And it's like, that's my narcissism that's constantly at battle with my like deep self-hatred, which I also think is a product of media, but that's a whole separate whatever point. There's this guy on the train who literally looks like he's the long lost Hemsworth brother. Okay. Gorgeous. I work in DC, the nation's capital, and so everybody wears like really nice suits, like luxurious suits and slacks, and they're all so well fitted because they're tailored because they're working on the Hill. And he's like 6'5" or like maybe even taller. He looks like, if you're watching Love Island UK right now, he has like the body of Tom on Love Island. Like, I mean, this man is gorgeous, scrumptious, delicious, right? And I look at him and I literally have the subconscious thought, okay, and I know that this is brutal. I have this subconscious thought, I feel like Bridget Jones right now. I am a fat cow. Like, I literally had that thought. And I was like, see? and again, that's not Bridget Jones's fault, right? That's, I'm not, this is not an isolated incident, okay? But I had this moment of like deep empathy for her. And I think that just proves my point of like, this movie is relatable. This movie is able to be empathized with, not because it created this idea that we have to be down on ourselves and created this idea that, you know, we have to have, you know, self-loathing and, you know, but it's still there. And so that way we're able to relate to it. And I just like, I had this moment where I was like, I literally am about to buy my diary right now and like start hyperfixating on my weight because I feel like crap next to this gorgeous model of a man who probably rolled out of bed and put on pants. And I like can't even muster up the courage to like make my eyebrows like lay flat across my face today. But anywho, like I just like, I very much had this moment of like, I sometimes appreciate films like this because empathizing and having cathartic moments with film is always a lovely thing. But it's when you're empathizing with something that's so morally wrong that you go like, how did we get here?
And I guess this is always the big question, right? With issues like this, it's like that I do think that there is a place for films where they do discuss the way that people view themselves and their struggles with their body image or their weight. And so it's not that those films shouldn't exist. It's, for me, the frustration comes from those seem to be the only films that exist for people of a certain size. It's like, if you're going to watch a film about someone who's above a UK size 10, which I think is like a US size 6, don't know for sure, is if you're going to watch the film about that, then there's going to be some mention of their weight or like what they look like, right? And that's to me super frustrating. I was just looking at the survey responses, so 78% of people who responded had seen Bridget Jones, and people saying, you know, we're expected to believe that Bridget Jones is bigger, you know, UK size 10 to 12. We're seeing, you know, Bridget make a big deal about her being quote unquote fat when she's a perfectly normal size and how that made people feel worse about their own weight. And it was kind of sad to see all these people saying the exact same thing, but in a way like, okay, at least affirming that we're all having a similar experience.
And then it's so weird, like, as we were discussing earlier, it's so weird hearing that, right? And like feeling that pit in your stomach that, you know, this is a problem and it has been affirmed, but then also like cheering when you need to cheer in the movie and like loving the sweet moments. You know, how can a movie that has caused, you know, like undeniable, and I don't mean this on like a huge, like in, you know, gross scale, but like undeniable harm in the sense that like everyone, many people share the same experience. How can a movie that's caused undeniable harm also like provide laughs and smiles and like a sense of love and affection to the characters? And I think that's that just like duality that I often find myself fighting with, you know, in film, in literature, and everything. You know, there can be things that are very unpalatable and very morally questionable. But you can still like the story, like the writing, like the direction, like things about it. And Bridget Jones is a perfect example of that, I think.
We will move on to talk about Dumplin' next.
Yeehaw!
So Yeehaw, here we go.
yeah, you have to talk about this in American accent.
Yeah. Dumplin', the 2018 film. I'm going to stop now. 2018 film adaptation of a book by the same name written by Julie Murphy. The film was directed by Anne Fletcher and stars Danielle McDonald and Jennifer Aniston. Danielle plays Willow Dean Dixon.
Willowdane Dixon.
Who after her aunt Lucy dies, she enters the local beauty pageant that is run by her mother, played by Jennifer Aniston. Willowdane and her friends initially enter in the hopes of ruining the pageant, but find themselves learning to embrace themselves and each other. The film has an 87% score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 6.5 star rating on IMDb. I remember watching this for the first time. I can't tell you when I watched it for the first time because I literally can't remember. I think it was when it first came out. And I remember sitting down and watching it, and although it still has those discussions about weight and all of those different things that we'll get into, I remember watching it and genuinely having like a really emotional reaction to it, because I was like, God, if I had had a film like this when I was like, I don't know, 15, maybe I wouldn't have felt so shit.
Yeah.
Had you seen this film before this podcast?
Yes. Yeah, so I have a difficult relationship with this film.
Mm-hmm.
So you, I mean, I submitted the survey, so you've probably seen this. I don't know that mm-hmm. you knew it was me, but I have a very difficult relationship with this film, and I don't care about outing my very, very fatphobic mother on here because she'll never listen to it. But She is just that. She's very fatphobic. She has deep-seated personal body image issues that she has so graciously passed down to me. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen her, like, obviously I used to live with her, but like since I've been out of the house, you know, when I turned 18 or whatever and like went to college, I don't think I've ever visited her and her not say something about my weight. And she mm-hmm. constantly is saying things about her weight, and she's also a serial Netflix new movie watcher. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember when this movie came out on Netflix, she's just like me. She loves to, like, if she likes something, she'll just watch it like 6 times instead of just watching it once and then revisiting it years later like a normal person. I just like, I have my favorites and then I just put them on repeat. So she watched this movie, not with me for the first time, but I think by like her third watch of being like, I love this movie. Oh my God, this is so cute. It has Jennifer Aniston, blah, blah, blah. I sat down and watched it with her, and she loved it, crying at the parts where you need to cry. And I just kept thinking to myself, like, how can you like this movie? Like, did you just miss the message? Mm-hmm. Have you just totally and completely missed the wonderful message of this film? And I feel like that's really like tainted my view of this film. And I tried really hard to separate that from my watch this time. But I still have just a complicated relationship to it because I just have this like, this very personal feeling, obviously not objective in any way, very subjective. Mm-hmm. I have this very personal feeling of like, how effective could it possibly be if my mom can't get it, you know? And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like that made it really tough for me. But I agree. Like, this is a really wonderful portrait of the types of media and body representation that we should be seeing.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there's something to be said about, and I feel like we kind of touched on this with Bridget Jones, of like, you know, why is it that when you have someone on screen that's of a certain size that the narrative has to be about their size? And I think you can obviously make this argument for Dumplin'. Like, the movie mm-hmm. is very much centered around her life, you know, being the size that she is and how people perceive her and treat her and how she tries to, you know, perceive herself and treat herself, etc. And sometimes it would just be refreshing to see someone exist in a world completely separate from the, you know, what's the word, like in the spotlight of their weight. Mm-hmm. But I still think that the message is clear and really strong and good, mm-hmm. like morally good, you know. A lot of great performances in this film, very, very touching. I do think it's a good film. I just have that like deep-seated anger like towards my mom for this film.
Yeah. No, I It's a difficult one when you have that kind of experience with watching it for the first time. It's always going to put like a sour note on something, which is a shame because, yeah, like you said, I do think that the message is pretty blatant and clear. I really like the way it's portrayed with the character of Millie more than I do with the character of Willowdean, actually, because she is just breath of fresh air, just
yes,
loves herself, doesn't even think about like how her weight might affect her chances in this beauty pageant. She's just there because she's like, yeah, yeah. I can do this, and I can sing while twirling hula hoops around my arms, like I can do it all.
Yeah, and even if she does have those feelings, right, which it would only be normal to have them considering the world we grew up in, she doesn't let it get her down. She just continues living. And like, what a I think like something that is so genuinely refreshing about this movie is that Willowdean is very imperfect. Okay, she has like a lot of internalized fat phobia, like that she projects onto people like Millie. I mean, she calls her, I can't remember the exact words she calls her, but she says like, at least I'm not like clueless or something. And she's very, you know, snubby towards Millie and very just like, I'm better than you because I acknowledge my weight and you don't. And like, I am much more in touch with reality than you because of this and blah, 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 blah. And I just think like it's you don't see that very often, you know. Mm-hmm. We see anti-heroes, but not in this way where like a supporting character is truly like a really wonderful moral representation, and then the main character has several flaws. So I think that is just so interesting, that dynamic.
Yeah, and I find it really interesting like the way that the phrasing of certain things is different in this film. So like when Bridget Jones calls herself fat, it's done in a very self-deprecating, self-hating way. Whereas when Willowdean calls herself fat in this film, it's more of like a matter of fact, this is just what yeah. I am, but not coming from a place of like, and I need to change that. It's more like, yeah, this is what I look like. And the dynamic of having her mother be like a beauty pageant queen, like, mm-hmm. And the whole thing of like, yeah, we know how it happened. You lost all the weight and you kept it off, but Aunt Lucy didn't. And it's just like, there's all these layers to it that are kind of in there that I think they handle it really well. I think there's elements to it that probably could have been, you know, better like every film, but I think overall it just felt like a real breath of fresh air to see something like this portrayed in a way that felt really sensitive to the topic. And I also like that if anyone ever made like any snide comments or looks at Willowdean about her weight, it was framed in a way where you were supposed to be annoyed at them, not like that you were supposed to agree with them. You were annoyed mm-hmm. at them for saying something like that, which again, if you compare that to Bridget Jones, you spend the whole time laughing when people say mean things to her. So
yeah,
there's definitely a tone shift in this. It's still a comedy, it's still lighthearted and fun, but yeah, just a complete shift in tone from the other. You know,
I have a question for you,
mm-hmm.
and I hope that this comes across the right way. I want to make it abundantly clear that I am absolutely not trying to compare like weight and like skin color. Okay, like those are two very different things. But I feel like as we move in the direction of anti-racism, something that is consistently brought up is when people say like, oh, I don't see color. Well, that's really harmful actually, because you should see color and you should realize that there's an inequity all around us. Mm-hmm. And I am curious, that kind of played in my head when on like two separate occasions, her very thin best friend Ellen and her love interest both say like, I don't see that. Like, I just see you existing, right? I just see you as Willowdean. I don't see your weight. I don't see you as fat. Like, I don't see you as these things. And I just wonder, and I don't have the answer to this. I feel conflicted on it, which is why I'm bringing it up. Like, do you feel that that is like dismissive at all to like, the world does treat people of Willowdean size differently, and we know that to be objectively true. And so choosing to not acknowledge it can be a little naive. Or do you feel like that is a good way to acknowledge that we shouldn't look at people at face value? I'm just curious how you took that.
I don't think it's fair to say I don't see that, because we people, you know, if you can see, you can see. Like, it's, you know, you see people, you look at what they look like. Everybody does it. It's just, you know, it's part and parcel of, like, life.
We all judge. Like, we all judge.
We all look. Subconsciously. All see, like, whether it's a subconscious judgment, whether it's just, like, acknowledgement. It doesn't even need to be judgment. It's just, like, an acknowledgement of they're this size, they're this skin color. Like, everyone does it. It's, like, it's not even judgment.
They have this difference,
Yeah, they look this way. It's fine. And I think that sometimes when you kind of go with the attitude of, oh, I don't even see that, I don't see you as fat, I don't, like, it's like, okay, cool, but, like, that's not the point we're making, you know. And I think that it is actually, in a way, harmful, because it's like, well, you're ignoring the point, I guess. It's like,
yeah,
because what is the point there, that people will only love and appreciate you if they don't see your weight? Like, that's
exactly, yeah,
a really awkward space for it to be in. And that's probably one of the things that I thought could have been handled better. Like, when people say, oh, I don't see your weight, it's like, you do, though. Like, and if someone, and I think the other thing that's a bit iffy about that is if someone is genuinely, like, saying things as Willow Dean does, where she's like, no, I'm, like, a fat girl, and all these people are like, no, you're not, like, I don't even see that. It's like, you're really dismissing the way she views herself.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
she's saying that, and there's that scene actually where she calls herself fat, and her best friend's like, oh, you know, I've never called you that word, I would never. And it's like, she clearly doesn't care about, like, Willow Dean clearly doesn't care about the connotations of the word fat. Like, she doesn't, clearly doesn't really give a shit.
Or is at least making an effort to reclaim it as a neutral word and not a not like a distinctly negative word.
Whereas her friends are like, don't want to call her that because they're worried that, you know, how she'd react. And you know what? Fair enough. Like, don't go around just randomly calling people
fat. Assuming that they're okay with that.
Because you don't know whether people will be, like, some people really have a very visceral reaction to that word, myself included. Even, you know, and I hear people all the time reclaiming it, and I love that for them. I really do, because I think it's great.
But it's not a blanket movement. It doesn't apply to everyone.
Yeah. So I think it's a weird space to be in, but I don't think it's ever wise to tell someone, oh, I don't see you as this. Because at the end of the day, what people look like is a part of them. It's a part of their identity. It's a part of how you view yourself, whether that be negatively or positively. And I think when you completely dismiss it and you go, I don't see that, I just see you, it's like, but this is a part of me. So you have
to. It's part of their lived experience.
Yeah. And it's a part of how I operate in this world. And if you completely ignore it, then you're ignoring a crucial part of my own experience.
I also think that, you know, thinking about, like, relationships, like, romantic relationships, right? We have this idea of, like, leagues, okay? We all have heard of it. Or, you know, they're out of your league, or you need to, you're punching up, or, you know, whatever, right? I think that's a British term, but I stole punching. It from Love Island. You're punching up. And so we have this idea of leagues, right? And that, like, certain people belong together just based on a, like, basically numerical value of how attractive they are conventionally, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so what happens when two people who are on different ends of the conventionally attractive scale, okay? Willa Dean, clearly not conventionally societally attractive, right? We know this to be true from the message of the movie. And then Bo, the heartthrob, the one that everybody wants to be with, is on the hot end of that conventionally attractive scale, right? When people see them together, they're going to look, right? Because as we just said, we pass judgment and acknowledgement of those societal norms all the time, subconsciously. And I think about, like, you know, if Bo has this idea of, like, oh, well, I don't see her weight. Well, then what happens when Willa Dean starts, what could happen rather? Okay. I think Willa Dean is a very strong person who clearly has, you know, begun her journey to reclaiming, you know, the way people think about her, and is not as much of a people pleaser as, you know, others and stuff like that. Like I said, myself included. like, I'm always very perceptive of, like, is someone looking at me funny? Is someone perceiving me at all in a way that I don't want to be perceived? And I think about, like, if you don't acknowledge the discrepancy there, right, societally, then when one person starts to notice, then that's a big mental baggage for them.
And this is where I think the message gets a bit murky, because it's like the argument is they don't see her size. And that's where I'm like, okay, but like, what message is that really sending? Because if the overall message is that she has reclaimed herself, she's really confident with herself and she's happy with who she is, you know, I think ultimately, realistically, this for me, don't know whether you agree with this, I think this is a story about grief as opposed to a story about someone's weight. I think the overall arc of the story is her coming to terms with the death of her aunt, and how that in turn trickles down into the way that she sees herself. That underlying theme becomes a bit murky when you have characters saying, oh yeah, I just don't see you like that, because it feels a bit dismissive.
No, I definitely agree that this is a story about grief. And I think it's a really brilliant story about grief, because grief is not pretty, right? I mean, usually everybody's grief experience is different, but it's usually not pretty. And it usually can, I don't want to say usually, but it can cause people to be nasty and rude and question things and question their lives. And I think that we see all of this in Willa Dean, in the way that she treats Millie and in the way that she treats Ellen at points, in the way that she treats herself and even her, you know, mom at times. Not that I'm saying her mom is some saint who deserves to be, you know, like, treated with all due respect, but, you know, like, you can see Willa Dean processing all of these emotions. And I appreciated this realistic look into how grief can really just get in your head and live there and set itself there. And it takes a lot to get out of it. And I think another thing that this movie does really well, even if for a large portion of the movie, she is kind of on this journey of like isolation almost, I think it shows the value in support and having a team of people around you that are going to lift you up, which is something that Bridget Jones did not have.
Yes, definitely. It's quite interesting seeing the different responses to this film on the survey, because so 53% of people who responded had seen this film, and the responses do kind of vary. You've got some people saying that they found it to be quite a hard watch because she's so young, and when you compare that to Bridget Jones, by contrast, it shows the desire to be smaller as a theme across the board. Someone said that Dumplin reminded me that beauty and thinness are not synonymous, which I thought was really lovely and well put.
What a beautiful way to put it. Way better than anything I'm saying.
Someone said that it was the first time they'd seen a genuinely plus size actor play a plus size role and then get to have a happy ending, and that meant a lot to them. But it is just a varied thing where like someone said that they felt scenes related to them, but they didn't really enjoy seeing the emphasis on weight and size against a measure of beauty. And this is that awkward thing where these stories do deserve to have a spotlight, of course, but it's, I think we're so used to seeing it constantly that it's almost become too much of the norm. And it can
there's
be
quite definitely like a lack
people.
Of subtlety. You know, like, you can tell you can tell a message of comparing weight to beauty in a much more subtle way by placing this in the world of a pageant. You're obviously speaking very candidly and openly about your message. And I think that, you know, we were talking about our love for Millie, and something that I love and think it was such a genuinely brilliant choice is, you know, we watch this movie and we go on this journey of like self-love, and we should, you know, we should not put anyone down, thin or small, because there's, you know, there's a lot of times where Willa Dean puts Ellen down for being thin. You know, mm-hmm. she villainizes thinness and the privilege that comes with that. I'm not saying that privilege does not come with that. It most certainly does. But she definitely, like, I think villainizes it a little bit, which is, you know, also problematic, although eventually resolved. But I like that Millie doesn't win. I like that Becca wins, you know? Mm. I think that it really, I think what it does, or at least for me, I'll speak on behalf of myself, what it did for me is I went on this journey of, you know, rah, 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 we need to see more representation. And that was the, I think if you have these, like, incredibly happy, sappy, perfect endings, you can kind of walk away with it being like, okay, well, everything's resolved. And that is like a wake-up call that the Beccas are still winning in this moment in life. The Beccas are still being prioritized in terms of beauty. And we are getting closer, you know, like, obviously, again, this is very literal in this sense of the movie, but like, we are getting closer because Millie's are runners up. But I think Becca is a really harsh but necessary reminder that we still have a lot of ways to go.
Our next film, Good Luck to You, Leo Grande, which came out last year.
Is it grand or grande? I've been saying grand.
I've been saying grande.
Is there an accent? Okay, we can stick with you. It sounds more posh when you say Leo Grande. No, I like grande.
We're going to go with grande. I'm sorry if I'm wrong.
Okay.
It might be grand. I don't know. I was just going because I say Ariana Grande.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
It's 2022 film. Dramedy is the word I'm using. Directed by Sophie Hyde and written by Katie Brand. The film stars Emma Thompson as a retired religious education teacher who hires a sex worker played by Darren McCormack. The majority of the film takes place in a hotel where the two meet up. Emma Thompson's character Nancy has admitted that she has never experienced an orgasm and has vowed never to fake an orgasm again. And the film follows Nancy's journey to accepting herself and her body and finding the liberation in appreciating and understanding yourself. I watched this film for the first time last year when it came out, of the recommendation of our good friend Billy, who was like, Jess, you have to watch this film because you will love it. It is your type of film, and she was right.
I loved this film. Oh my goodness, I'm like never gonna shut up to people about it now. I loved this film. Thank you so much for giving me, I would have never known of its existence otherwise, so really? Thank you, Jess, because I literally am obsessed with this film now.
It's so good. Like, it's so,
like, actually so unbelievably good. Like, suspiciously good. Like, if people like this exist, right, who can act this well and write this well and direct this well, why don't, like, where are they? Like, why can't every movie be of this caliber? I've been like spoiled now. They are I mean, this is a masterclass in like every single aspect of filmmaking.
Yeah, I thought it's just brilliant. And it's the one film, in terms of the respondents from the survey, it's the one that the least amount of people have seen. Guys, correct your mistake. You have to watch this.
It's don't be like me.
So it has a 93% score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 7.2 star rating on IMDb. So it is the highest rated amongst the three films. Deserved. It's the way it handles so many different issues. Let's get started with
so
that.
Many.
So the overarching theme of this film is about a woman's relationship with her sex life and the way that she's kind of over time allowed herself to just push her own, you know, sexuality to the side in favor of just keeping the peace, and how she's pushed that onto younger people. She was a religious education teacher. There's a scene in the film.
Oh, is that what RE means?
RE, yeah, is religious education.
Oh, when she said, like, she said the oh my gosh, I almost said barista, the waitress said something about like religion, and I was like, I don't understand, like, what's going on. Okay, RE. Okay, yeah, religious RE. Educator. Okay, okay. Thank you. That
there was, like, a cultural divide here.
Yes.
So, yeah, RE is religious education. And so she, you know, there's the scene with the waitress who actually was taught by Emma Thompson's character, Nancy. And she's like, oh, yeah, you used to tell us that, you know, not to have our skirts below the knee, like above the knee and all of this stuff. And there's just this pent up kind of trauma from Nancy's perspective and how that's kind of spilled into every other aspect of her life, and how she's really dissatisfied with her body. And part of that is because of her own lack of what's the word I'm looking for? Part of that is like because,
exploration.
Yeah, lack of exploration and, you know, not really being at one with her sex life and her body as a whole. And it's... I want to jump straight to the end of this film.
Let's do it. Let's dive right in.
Because at the end of the film, we have Nancy. She stands in front of a mirror, completely naked, and she just looks at herself, and not in like a judging way, not even in like a look at me, I'm so sexy. It was just, oh, that's my body, and it's completely fine. It's more than fine. This is my vessel. This is me. And I was just like, wow.
Oh yeah, I was in awe. And what a great build, right? Like, the first, you know, I think meeting or two, I don't think you see anything of her body revealed. And then I think it's like the third or fourth, were there how many meetings? The fourth was when they met in the cafe, right?
I think so.
Okay, so I think, maybe I'm wrong, but the third meeting, I think you see her breasts. And then the fourth meeting is, you know, she bears it all. And so, like, what a great build, because I had this thought, like, early on in the movie where I was like, oh, Emma Thompson would never, I don't know why I thought this, but I just thought, like, Emma Thompson would never be nude on my screen, right? Like, she has it written in her contract or whatever that she's doing this movie about sexual empowerment, but that doesn't mean that she has to show anything. And it was so refreshing, right? Because, first of all, it's very rare. I feel like, I don't want to dismiss an entire genre of, like, I don't know if these are popular, like, in the UK, but they're becoming increasingly popular in the US, where we have, like, this kind of all of those, like, former gorgeous young actresses from, like, the 80s, 70s, 60s, that, like, were, like, basically the Bond girls, not literally, but, like, essentially, like, the most gorgeous girls of you know, American cinema of their time, have now kind of, like, come back and started doing these, like, golden age films of, like, what it's like to be older and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that there's not truth to them. I just saw 80 for Brady. I don't know if you
I've heard
have
of it.
You heard Jane of that Fonda, okay, really. These, like, core four, essentially, with a couple subs on the side, do these, like, very big, I don't want to say cartoony because that is kind of dismissive, but much more flashy, less rooted in reality movies about getting older. And there's truth to them, of course. Like, you know, you can take truth from anything, you know, things that are, you know, highly dramatized, things that are, you know, highly, you know, like, flips things on its head comedically. Like, you can always take truth from something. But this... maybe, like, one of the most raw and authentic films I think I've ever seen. I mean, I was just in complete awe of it. And it's so refreshing to see someone literally and figuratively bear it all and have this honest, necessary conversation about, like, aging and how it comes with so many complicated feelings. Not to mention, she has complicated feelings because her husband has died, which is also something that people go through, aging or not aging, right? Like, your person dies and then you have to reconsider your whole life. And so, yeah, it tackles so much and it does it somehow all, like, perfectly, which is insane. Like, how do you tackle it all perfectly?
I know. I was just so, like, blown away by this film. I think it is a career best performance from Emma Thompson.
Absolutely.
I think it's a shame that she didn't get a look in at ye olde Oscars, but obviously it's a heavy year already, so it's just like circumstance. But I had
never seen him in anything before. Okay. Oh, God, this is so embarrassing. I may have looked up Daryl McCormick edits on TikTok last night. Okay. Okay. Listen, it's just something that I did. We don't need to go too deep into it. He's gorgeous. I mean, he's gorgeous. Perfect for this and such a talented actor. Holy crap. But when I was looking at my edits, I saw that he's been in Peaky Blinders, which I have not had or not seen. But I didn't see much else. So, I guess he is pretty new to the scene.
Well, I've just had a look and he's been in a lot of things, but like in like one episode of stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
He's sort of popped up here and there and had more things popping up in the last few years, but this is probably his first like big thing that everyone will now sort of know him for. And like, what a find. Can I just say, like, what a phenomenal actor. Also stunning, as you said.
Oh my gosh. Like, I gotta fan myself, like, talking about this. I mean, Emma Thompson is striking, obviously. But, I mean, I just can't get over it. He's unbelievable. Anyways, moving on. Before I get too hot and bothered.
Yeah, I just really, really love the way that it portrayed a woman's experience with her body and her sex life, and you know, this idea that she, you know, he helped her reclaim that. And something I really love is when you're at the end of the film and they still haven't managed to make her orgasm, and then she's the one who does it. And
yes, oh my gosh, like, because
yes.
Yes, because I was watching it, and of course, you have this gorgeous man with this gorgeous woman, and you're like, please, please make her orgasm. Please, I'm begging. Like, we can't build up to nothing. She can't just not orgasm, okay? And I never in a million years even had the thought that she could or would do it herself. And when she did that, I was just like, yes. Like, this is why I'm not a writer, because I would have just been like, yep, and he makes her orgasm instantly. I would have no nuance or build to this situation. I would just be like, and that's it. Yeah.
When I was thinking of films to pick for this episode, this one came to mind purely because of that end scene. Like, that was the first thing that popped into my head.
Yeah.
But just like the way it just manages to showcase so many different issues but not feel like it's like pounding you over the head with them. It's like it just brings them up in a really subtle and nuanced way. I just think it's so well done, and I just love it so much, and I wish more people will watch it, because I think it's something that's definitely flown under the radar a bit.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And like, in that scene, like, okay, something, one of my personal insecurities is I have always hated, and it doesn't matter, like, my weight, it doesn't matter anything, the shape of my belly button, okay, is not like, it's like just kind of flat on top. I don't know how to describe it. Like, it's just basically like, you know how some people, like, okay, I'm gonna use like a very just like, like, clearly, this person has had surgery, but like Kendall Jenner, right? And her belly button is like literally half of a centimeter wide and like long and skinny. Mine is not. I have a very deep belly button, and like, I have skin that like hangs over it just naturally. Like, that's just the shape. I don't have like a taut vertical belly button. Mine is just kind of like squished. And I've always struggled with that. It's something like, it's a very, very big insecurity for me. And her belly button was like that. And I felt so seen. And I felt like I never in a zillion years would see someone, you know, paid to share their beautiful body and have a belly button that looked like that. And it was so cathartic and so amazing for me. And it just brought me so much joy and happiness that I can't even like begin to describe it. And what you were saying, of just like the way she looked at her body, like truly
neutrally. Mm. She wasn't jumping for joy over her body. She wasn't crying at her body. She was just, what I would like to believe, was thanking her body, you know, thanking her body for carrying her through this life and for having an orgasm and for being a center of pleasure and also being a center of stability. And like, that's how I took that scene. And that was just like so, so much needed.
Yeah, it feels like she really embraces her body and just kind of allows herself the freedom to like move forward in the world, very uninhibited by like self-hate. She just runs with it. And I just think that it was just so like chef's kiss. Just if you're going to make if you're going to make a movie about a relationship that a woman has with her body, I think this is how you do it.
Yes, I completely agree. I truly can't say enough good things about this movie. The way that it tackles the, you know, always perpetually hot topic of sex work. I love that, you know, he was the sex worker. I feel like so often women are the sex workers when they're portrayed in media. And like, I love the conversation about shame, you know, it's just like, I will literally be here all night if we continue talking about it, but I loved it. I think it was such a beautiful portrait of the difficulties people can have with their body without shaming you at all along the way, i.e. Bridget Jones's Diary, without villainizing certain aspects and being dismissive. Because like, again, going back to Dumplin, he acknowledges that she's old, right? He says like, I can find something sexy in anybody. I see that you're old. I have eyes. I think he even says at one point, I have eyes, when she's like, do you need a Viagra to like be with me? And he's like, no, I think you're beautiful. I know you're old. I can see it. I have eyes. That doesn't mean I don't think you're sexy. That doesn't mean I don't love your jawline. Oh, I'm swooning. But yeah, so I just, oh, it's so good. It's so good.
It's, you know, people agreed as well. Like the people who had seen it, there's, you know, comments on this survey saying that they felt like Emma's body was definitely out of the beauty standards, but she was still beautiful, still respected and treated as a person. She was more viewed for her personality than her body. It's very important, especially in sets when people feel vulnerable, which is very true. This very vulnerable performance. It's people saying it reminded them of the importance of accepting your body as it ages. People seem to be loving it, and more people, I think if more people watch it, they will also love it. I want to take a brief moment to kind of go through this survey with you, because I just think it's quite interesting. For anybody who wants like the full thing with the whole breakdowns of like everything, I'll try and find a way to put it in the description of this episode. But the people who responded, like 60.7% were female, 10% were non-binary, and 28% were male. So that's sort of the breakdown of gender there for you. It's a really interesting one, because I had like questions about like, do people agree with the statement that there's a lack of body size diversity in film and TV? And I had about half say that they strongly agree. 30% say that they just agreed. And then there was even like 7% of people that were like, nah, I don't think there is a lack of body size diversity. So it was an interesting spectrum. I had a question, would you like to see more representation of different body shapes and sizes in film and TV? And 82% said yes, and 17% that they weren't really bothered, but nobody said no. Interesting. And I think the questions that I really want to focus on is this idea of, do you think film and TV has affected your body image? 60.7% of people said yes, 25% of people said somewhat, and 14.3% of people said no. So it's clear that this does affect people. I can't get the breakdown of knowing who were the people to say no, whether it was the men who said no or the women. Like, I can't get that information from this, but it is interesting. you know, 89% of people said that they felt that the film and TV industry perpetuates beauty standards for all genders.
I do want to share, just while we're sharing like analytics and stuff, I just want to share, so my senior thesis in college, well, one of them was on the effects that image editing has on today's society. Mm-hmm. And I just want to share to everyone listening a very interesting metric that has really stuck with me all these years later and is like the one thing I remember from writing that thesis, which is horrible. And I don't know the exact numbers, but basically people did a study where they basically had like group A and group B. In group A, they showed people, I think it was like they showed them an edited image and then a non-edited, and it, oh my gosh, I cannot. An edited image and a non-edited image. And people in that group tended to pick the non-edited image. And then in group B, they gave them an edited image, pointed out all the things, and this is specifically relating to bodies, like the things that were changed in bodies with the edits. They gave them a clearly edited image, pointed out the things that were edited, and then gave them the unedited image. And even though they knew that like image A was edited, they still preferred that because they agreed that it looked way better. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was so fascinating to me because like I grew up watching people like Tana Mojo, who are like very open and honest about body editing and are like, yeah, I just look better when I edit my body, so I'm gonna continue doing it. Like, it's a non-secret. And people still, to this day, like, love her content, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's at least something somewhat valuable to be said about being transparent about it, at the very least. I mean, Lord knows that not everyone does that. But it's still, like, it just goes to show that, like, we have been so conditioned for this idea of a certain body type or, you know, looking a certain way or having a certain face or attributes or whatever. Like, we don't care if it's fake anymore. We just want it. Like, full stop. I have been so appreciative of this safe space that you have created to share our feelings on this sensitive but important topic. So thank you for having me. I am abundantly appreciative of you for forcing me to learn about and watch Good Luck to You, Leo Grande, and just for this experience. So thank you, Jess. I appreciate your platform and you inviting me on here. I'm very grateful.
Thank you so much for agreeing to join me. It's been really interesting discussion, and I just want to let anyone who's listening know that I want this to be as much of an open discussion as possible, if it can be. So, you know, if people want to message or send tweets, whatever they want to do, if they want to talk about this, then this is the space to do it. Because I think it's a really interesting discussion, and I think the only way things will change and get better is if we actually talk about it. So that would be my my last word, so to speak.
Your parting wisdom.
Yeah, my parting wisdom for everybody. But yes, thank you so much for joining me today. Do you want to just remind people where they can find you?
Oh my goodness, you can find me everywhere. You can find me on Twitter. I don't want to overstep and take any, you know, spotlight away from Jess and her platform, of course. But if anybody is interested in you know, having a particular discussion of me and my views and my opinions that I've shared today on the podcast, you can find me on Twitter at Mailer Talone. It's just Taylor Malone, but switch the first letters at Mailer Talone on Twitter. So I'd be more than happy to talk to anybody that wants to talk. And then where you can usually find me is I just am lucky enough to have some part in my boyfriend's lovely publication. It's featurepresentationvideo.com. We have two podcasts together. We have the Vince Vaughnathon, where we actually just had our very last episode, our finale of the Vince Vaughnathon, but it's perfect for binging, if you're interested, you can go and listen to our analysis of every Vince Vaughn movie ever made in chronological order and how he is a representation of film as a whole and the kind of eras we went through in film, which sounds so silly to say, but it's true. Listen to the podcast. Don't knock till you try it. Why Two Kids? I feel like we actually end up talking a lot of times about similar subjects to this, where we kind of reflect back on the things that we watched as children and think about how they held up. You know, do they hold up? Do they very much not? Some things very much do not. We are long overdue for a British Invasion episode, so Jess, anytime, let us know when you're interested in coming back on Y2 Kids. Yeah, exactly. And this time you'll get to choose because you're our British Invasion guest, so you won't have to watch a movie like Seaburg.
Which you forgot about.
Which is like all... Yes, I did. Because I tried to forget about it. Okay, let's not forget that I mentally tried to block it out. Everything that we do and post is on featurepresentationvideo.com, whether it's articles, columns, opinion pieces, reviews, etc. It's all there. I do a rom-com roundup every month. I chime in here and there, but find me on Twitter at @MailerTalone. Happy to discuss anything mentioned in this episode or beyond. And yeah, thank you again, Jess.
Thank you. And as always, you can follow the podcast, Better Bad Pod, on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow me on Twitter at @Jess_Rolland. I'm on Instagram as @JessRolland. But thank you so much to everybody for joining us today for this discussion and this discussion about these films. Let me know what you think about these films. And yeah, I will see you next time on Better Than Bad. Join me next time for part two of our discussion on the portrayal of beauty standards in film. In the next part, I'll be joined by Zoe Welts, where we'll be discussing our own experiences in the acting industry. See you next time.